You're listening to Radio Hangar, where the aviation conversation never stops. This is Traffic Pattern, and I'm your host, Pattern. Today we're talking about something that trips up a lot of pilots, especially those of us who learned to fly where the highest terrain feature was a water tower. We're talking mountain flying. Specifically, how to brief the weather and plan a flight when the rocks go up higher than you're used to flying. If you trained in the Midwest, the Southeast, or anywhere the sectional chart is mostly white with very few brown contour lines, this one's for you. Because mountain flying is not just regular flying at a higher altitude, the air behaves differently, the weather behaves differently, and the margin for error shrinks in ways that can surprise you if you haven't been taught what to look for. Shout out to our friends at aviationsoul.com. They make challenge coins for every step of the journey. Got your first solo? There's a coin for that. Private pilot, instrument commercial? They've got you covered. Great way to mark the milestones that matter. aviationsoul.com. All right, let's walk through this together. And I mean really walk through it. The way I'd want someone to walk me through it before my first flight into the Rockies, or the Sierras, or even the Appalachians. First thing, before we even touch a weather briefing, we need to talk about density altitude. You learned about density altitude for the written test. You probably calculated it a few times during training, but if you've always flown at fields near sea level, you might not have a gut feel for what it actually does to your airplane. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. Your airplane at a field elevation of 6,000 feet on a warm day might perform like it's at 9 or 10,000 feet. That means longer takeoff rolls, reduced climb rates, and your engine, if it's normally aspirated, is making less power than you're used to seeing. So step one before any mountain flight, calculate your density altitude for departure, for your route, and for your destination. Not just the field elevation, the density altitude. If you're flying a Cessna 172 or a Piper Cherokee, pull out your performance charts and actually look at the takeoff distance and climb rate at that density altitude. If the numbers don't work, the flight doesn't go. It's that simple. Now let's get into the weather briefing itself. This is where things get really different from what you might be used to. When I brief weather for a flight across Kansas, I'm mostly looking at ceilings, visibility, frontal passages, and winds aloft. Those things still matter in the mountains, absolutely, but there are layers of additional information you need, and some of the standard products take on a whole new meaning. Let's start with winds aloft. In flat terrain, winds aloft tell you about your ground speed and fuel planning. In mountainous terrain, winds aloft can tell you whether the flight is even survivable. I'm not being dramatic. When winds at ridge level exceed about 25 to 30 knots, you can get mountain wave turbulence, severe downdrafts, and rotor activity that will ruin your whole day in a light airplane. The general guidance from the Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, and from experienced mountain pilots is this. If winds at mountaintop level are forecast above 20 to 25 knots, a newer mountain pilot in a light single should seriously consider not going. Check the winds aloft forecast, the FB winds, at the altitudes that correspond to the ridges and passes you'll be crossing. Not just your cruise altitude. You need to know what the wind is doing at ridge height. Next, airmets and sigmets. You check these on every flight, right? In the mountains, pay special attention to airmet Tango for turbulence and airmet Sierra for mountain obscuration. Mountain obscuration means clouds are sitting on the mountains, filling the valleys, hiding the terrain. If you're flying VFR, and most mountain flying in light airplanes is VFR. Mountain obscuration is a no-go. You cannot see the rocks, and the rocks always win. Here's a scenario. You pull up your briefing and you see airmet Sierra for mountain obscuration over the Central Rockies from flight level 100 through 16,000. That's the surface of the mountains through 16,000 feet. That means the mountains are in the clouds. Even if the area forecast says scattered clouds at 12,000, those clouds are intersecting terrain. You're not going VFR through that. Now the area forecast itself, when you read it for mountainous areas, pay attention to how ceilings are described relative to terrain. Sometimes ceilings are reported above ground level, sometimes above mean sea level. In the mountains, that distinction is critical. A ceiling reported at 5,000 feet above ground level over a valley floor at 7,000 feet MSL means the cloud bases are at 12,000 MSL. But if you need to cross a ridge at 11,500, you might have room. Maybe. If you're crossing a ridge at 12,500, you don't have room. You have to do the math and know which reference they're using. Let's talk about PIREPs. Pilot reports in the mountains. PIREPs are gold. They are the most valuable piece of your weather briefing because mountain weather is incredibly localized. A forecast can tell you what's expected over a broad area, but a PIREP from a pilot who flew through that pass 45 minutes ago tells you what's actually happening right now, right there. When you call flight service or use an online briefing tool, specifically ask for PIREPs along your route and at your planned altitude. Look for reports of turbulence intensity, icing, cloud tops and bases, and ride quality. If you see a PIREP from a regional jet reporting moderate turbulence at 14,000 over a certain range, imagine what that means for your Skyhawk at 10,500. It's going to be worse for you, much worse. Light airplanes feel turbulence more intensely than heavy airplanes do, and if there are no pyreps along your route, that's information too. It might mean nobody's been flying there, which might mean conditions are keeping people away. Here's another piece of the briefing that a lot of flatland pilots skip over. The freezing level. In flat terrain, you check the freezing level mainly for icing concerns during instrument flight. In the mountains, the freezing level matters even for VFR pilots because it affects your usable altitude. If the freezing level is at 11,000 and the passes you need to cross are at 10,500, you're flying very close to where ice can form. And if you encounter clouds near those passes, which happens more than you'd like, you could pick up ice with almost no altitude margin to descend out of it. In a light airplane without DACE equipment, that's a serious hazard. Let's pause on something practical. What does a good mountain weather briefing actually look like? Let me sketch out the flow I use. I start with the big picture. Surface analysis chart. Where are the fronts? Where are the pressure systems? In mountain flying, a strong low pressure system or an approaching front can produce winds and weather that make an entire mountain range a no-go zone. I want to see stable, high pressure weather over my route if possible. Then I check the area forecast for the specific zones I'll be flying through. I'm reading the text carefully, looking for mentions of turbulence, mountain obscuration, icing levels, and wind. Then winds aloft. I check multiple altitudes, especially the ones near ridge height and my planned cruise altitude. If the winds at ridge height are calm to 15 knots, I'm feeling good. 15 to 25, I'm cautious and looking at everything else more carefully. Above 25 at ridge level, I'm probably finding an alternate route or an alternate day. Then airmets and sigmets. Any Tango? Any Sierra? Any Zulu for icing? Then pereps. Recent ones along my route. I want to hear what other pilots experienced. Then surface observations, the metters at airports near my route. In the mountains, you might check 10 or 12 stations because weather varies so much from one valley to the next. An airport on one side of a ridge might be reporting clear skies while the airport in the next valley over is reporting instrument conditions. That's normal in the mountains. Finally, and this is something the airman certification standards actually emphasize for practical tests, I look at the forecast trends. Is the weather improving or deteriorating? If conditions are marginal now but expected to improve by the time I arrive, that's different from marginal now and getting worse. The examiner is looking for you to not just read the weather, but interpret what it means for your specific flight. Let me give you a real-world scenario. Say you're planning a flight from Boise, Idaho to Missoula, Montana. You're flying a Piper Cherokee 180. Let's say it's July. Your briefing shows high pressure over the region, skies mostly clear, winds aloft at 9,000 are from the southwest at 18 knots. Freezing level is at 15,000, no airmets. You've got a couple of pyreps from earlier in the morning reporting smooth rides at 11,500. Looks great, right? Here's what the flatland pilot might miss. It's July. In the mountains, July means afternoon thermal activity. Those clear skies in the morning turn into building cumulus by noon, and by 2 or 3 in the afternoon, you can have thunderstorms popping up over the higher terrain. The morning pyreps don't tell you what the afternoon will be like, and those southwest winds at 18 knots at 9,000, by afternoon. As the sun heats the terrain, those winds interact with the thermals in the terrain to create turbulence that wasn't there in the morning. So the experienced mountain pilot reads that briefing and says, "I'm departing early. I want to be at my destination or pass the highest terrain by noon." That's the mountain flying rule of thumb. Get your mountain flying done in the morning, especially in summer. That's not something you learn flying in flat country, but it's critical knowledge. Another thing, route planning. In flat terrain, you file direct or along airways, and the terrain below you is mostly irrelevant because you're well above it. In the mountains, your route is dictated by the terrain. You fly through passes, along valleys, and over ridges at specific points where the elevation allows it. Your weather briefing needs to cover each of those specific areas, not just the general region. Get a good sectional chart. Look at the maximum elevation figures, the MEF numbers in each quadrangle along your route. Those tell you the highest obstacle in that area, including terrain and towers, rounded up to the next 100 feet. You need to be above those numbers with margin to spare. In the mountains, a general rule is to have at least 2,000 feet of clearance above ridgetops when you can, because that's where the turbulence lives. If you're crossing a ridge at 10,000 feet, you want to be at 12,000 if your airplane can get there at that density altitude. And that brings us right back to where we started, density altitude. It all connects. I also want to mention something about go, no-go decisions with mountain flying. When you're new to it, err on the side of not going. I mean that sincerely. The mountains will be there next week. Your experience level right now is what it is, and there is no shame in looking at a briefing and deciding, "I'm not confident enough in these conditions to try this today." That is the mark of a safe pilot. The airman certification standards emphasize aeronautical decision-making for a reason. Good judgment is the single most important skill you bring to the cockpit. And if you're serious about flying in the mountains, get some dual instruction before you go. Many flight schools in mountain areas offer mountain flying courses. Spend a day or two with an instructor who flies in that terrain every day. They'll show you things you can't learn from a book or a podcast. How to approach a ridge at a 45-degree angle so you can turn away if there's a downdraft on the other side. How to read the wind direction from the surface features below you. How to use the terrain to find lift. That kind of knowledge is invaluable, and it's worth every dollar. One more tip on the weather briefing front. There's an excellent resource from the FAA called Advisory Circular 61-107, which is all about mountain flying operations. It covers weather, performance, route selection, emergency procedures, all of it. I'd recommend downloading it and reading through it before your first mountain flight. It's free, it's thorough, and it could save your life. All right, let's bring it in for a landing. Mountain flying is some of the most beautiful, rewarding flying you can do. The views are unreal. The sense of accomplishment when you navigate through mountain terrain safely is incredible, but it demands more preparation, more weather awareness, and more humility than flying over flat terrain. Build your weather briefing skills for the mountain environment before you go. Start with understanding density altitude. Brief the winds aloft at ridge level. Check for mountain obscuration. Hunt for pereps. Understand the daily weather cycle in the mountains, and get instruction from someone who knows the terrain. Here's something I wish someone told me when I was training. The mountains don't care how many hours you have, they respond to preparation and respect, not experience alone. Today's segment drew from the FAA's Advisory Circular on Mountain Flying Operations, guidance from the Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association on Mountain Weather Briefing, and general mountain flying wisdom from instructors who fly the high country daily. Radio Hangar is an AI-generated aviation broadcast built by pilots who believe good training content should be available to everyone. You can find more at radiohangar.com. I'm Pattern. Go fly safe. And if the mountains are calling, make sure you brief the weather twice. Radio Hangar, clear skies and tailwinds.